You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast for the Worldview segment, I do a review of Julia Roberts' infomercial for the environmental campaign group Conservation International, in which she assumes the persona of Mother Nature. And for the main topic, I talk about all of the information that's out there with regards to homesteading, permaculture, and entrepreneurship, and kind of how to get started, or at least a way to get started. Of course, there's many, but I give kind of some suggestions, or at least some different works that you can start with. On today's Worldview segment, I want to play for you a commercial that Julia Roberts did as Mother Nature. And I want to talk about this because there's some really important aspects of it. First is that this is really a form of pantheism, and I'll hit on that in a minute. But as Christians, what happens a lot of times is we hear this and we wholesale reject it, which I agree. I reject the ideology and really the religiosity behind what she's saying in this commercial. And I reject the ideology of, say, environmentalism and all of that stands for, especially the hardcore environmentalism, which literally places man and nature on the same page, or even man below Mother Nature, or below nature, below the animals, below the plants, you know, talking about, you know, humankind as a parasite and how we're evil and we need to basically cull the population, etc. Okay, so I want to make a distinction there. But as Christians, a lot of times we associate everything with that movement, those kind of people, and we reject everything that they say. I mean, to the point of a fault, I would say. For example, any type of hippie that's very into nature, into healthy eating, into even, let's say, a vegan or something like that, or maybe they're not a vegan. Maybe they eat meat, but only grass-fed, etc., etc. And we reject all of that. We reject that even eating style based on the ideology of the people who are supporting it, which I think is the mistake. Okay? As Christians, we should want to eat healthy. As Christians, we should be wise stewards of the earth. Okay? And that is not to say to be a pantheist or anything like that. It's because the Creator gave us His creation, or He created everything, that we should honor Him through honoring the creation or being wise stewards over the creation. That, to me, means humane treatment of animals. I don't consider confined animal feeding operations in an industrial setting to be wise stewards of creation. Okay, I don't consider eating highly processed foods that has lots of toxins in it to be a wise steward over our bodies or over creation, or somehow that's dominion or anything like that idea. Okay, so the proper balance needs to be struck when we look at these issues. I think it's great, and if I could eat nothing but grass-fed beef, chicken, pork, whatever, then I'm going to do that. And if I can find all non-GMO type feeds, that's what I'm going to do. In fact, that is what we do, to the max extent possible. Now, I'm not naive enough to think that I'm not eating junk on occasion if I, you know, get something out in town or go to a restaurant, whatever. Okay, but to the max extent possible, I would like to eat healthy and be a wise steward of the land. So again, my whole point here is to for Christians to understand that don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Okay, not everything that an environmentalist has to say is garbage based on their fundamental underlying assumptions and worldview. I get it. Believe me, their underlying worldview is pantheistic in many cases, it's atheistic, etc. I get it. I reject that ideology completely. But that doesn't mean, for example, that we don't treat animals humanely. Okay, do you see what I'm saying here? All right, so let me play this for you and just make a couple of comments. I found it very interesting. Yeah, here we go. All right, it's called a Conservation International film. Nature.
Others call me Mother Nature.
What this is really saying is replacing God with Mother Nature. 4.5 billion years. It's obviously Darwinian in its ideology.
500 times longer than you.
Basically saying, hey,
I don't really need people.
Mother Nature,
but people need me.
Is above man.
Yes, your future depends on me.
Denies the God of the Bible.
You thrive. When I falter, you falter. Or worse. But I've been here for eons. I have fed species greater than you, and I have starved species
denies
greater than
you. Man made in the image of God.
My oceans. My soil. My flowing streams. My forests. They all can take you or leave you.
This is directly taking the God of the Bible out of the picture and putting nature in that place.
Disregard me doesn't really matter to me, one way or the other.
On the one hand, it gives sovereignty to Mother Nature.
Your actions will determine your fate, not mine. I am nature. I will go on. I am prepared to evolve. Are you?
And then it ends by saying nature doesn't need people. Okay, again, obviously a direct denial of the God of the Bible, it is pantheistic. So in other words, it is taking God, throwing him out of the picture and placing Mother Nature in his place. So Mother Nature is the transcendent reality of which the material universe and human beings are only manifestations. And you saw that basically throughout that commercial. So it is the denial of God's nature, okay, like God's character, his nature, and it expresses that tendency to identify God and nature. Okay, so it's one in the same. So nature is God. God is nature. So again, pantheism to a T there. It's a philosophical doctrine held by many environmentalists. Whether they realize it or not, that's what it is. Okay, so again, as Christians, we need to really have a right understanding of what stewardship is. You know, stewardship in the Christian is honoring the Creator through our actions in creation. Okay, we were put here to work, and and that's what we should do in a wise manner. So to me, wise stewardship is the honoring, and be careful, don't misunderstand me, the honoring of the creation, because we honor the Creator. Okay, and I hope that makes sense and it doesn't come out pantheistic. All right, so let me read this. Romans 1:25. Because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator who is blessed forever. Amen. Okay, this is essentially what the pantheist does. You know, they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature. Okay, we can say worship and serve Mother Nature rather than the Creator. That would be a perfectly good replacement there as an application of this passage of Scripture. Okay, so again, as Christians, a right understanding of stewardship, this is something that all Christians should evaluate and look at it and say, hey, am I honoring the Creator through my actions in creation? For today's main topic, I want to address the question, where to start? And the inspiration for this podcast comes from someone who wrote us a little while back, and they said this. So I'll just read it. I'm redacting their names, but it says, "My husband and I are starting on the journey of training to be missionaries in a third world country. Part of the ministry we hope to have is a trade school type ministry where we can teach people to read, to raise chickens and goats, to fix cars, to cook, to sew, or anything else that will keep them and their children from starving. I just found your website through Facebook, and I really respect what you're doing. If we were going to be staying in this country, we'd be doing the same thing. I contacted you because I would like any advice you have to give on learning, teaching, homesteading-type skills like raising rabbits and growing food sustainably. There's so much information out there that, frankly, I'm overwhelmed, and I don't know where to look first. But you're living it, so I would appreciate any resources you can recommend or any raw advice that you can give." First of all, I want to thank her for asking this question to us. And quite frankly, even though we are trying to live it, that's what we're doing right now, is we're trying and we're slowly and we're making progress. And I know what she means about being overwhelmed. That's probably where I was a couple years ago. Because there's so much information out there. It's both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in that all that information is out there, and it's a curse, and it's like, where do I start? Okay, so I want to talk about this question today, where to start, and just kind of answer some of the questions or some of the thoughts that she laid out there. And I did already write her back. But I wanted to repeat that because I'm sure that a lot of other people are in the same boat. They want to, you know, whether they're training or not to go to a third world country, they may want to move towards this kind of lifestyle. And it's like, where do I start? I don't know anything about homesteading or small-scale farming or trades or starting a small business, etc. Okay, so that's what I want to hit on today. And I will start by saying, you know, you just got to take it one bite at a time. Okay, it's like how to eat an elephant, one bite at a time. So my recommendation to her and her husband with their specific course of action that they're taking, and I don't know what third world country they're going to or anything like that, but if that's what they're wanting to do, if they're going to go and help them become, you know, sustenance farmers and small business owners, because I that's kind of the picture I get from the work that they're trying to achieve, is they want people to be able to take care of themselves, and which is a noble goal. And this is a lot. Honestly, this is great. This is much better than going somewhere and handing out rice or giving them free Monsanto seed to plant in their ground, which is going to put them on a chemical treadmill and an unsustainable path. Okay, and we're going to talk about that as far as like looking at where you're going, doing an assessment of it in order to try and provide something that's realistic for them. Okay, because a lot of times we do that. We'll go into, I think of Oprah, for example, where she, you know, bought a school somewhere in Africa, paid for it all to be built and everything else. And, you know, within a year, it was destroyed and decrepit because, you know, it was just a thought like, hey, look what I've provided. Look what the good I've done with no follow-up, no way to maintain it. It was a structure not even built that would work well in that area, etc. Okay, so it's really important to assess where you're going. And that also applies to, for example, your land in the area that, say, you're buying property. What grows well? What are other people raising successfully in your area? What businesses are thriving in your area? Okay, you can't bring something that you want to bring to an area that where it's not sustainable. Okay, so that's, you need to consider that very heavily. But I recommended to her to pick two or three homesteading families that are doing it and follow them. And there's lots of them out there. So don't pick more than that. Or again, you'll be overwhelmed. But pick two or three and listen, read, watch everything that you can get your hands on. And it's good to be able to follow specific families because you can kind of get an idea of what they're doing, their successes, their failures. Hopefully they're sharing all of those things because that will really help. You know, that's one thing that we do as well. We are open with our failures as well as our successes. Some other ways to start here is start building a small library. Now, I'm going to address something specific that what she talked about is wanting to teach people how to read. Now, I'm going to make an assumption that they're going to teach wherever they go, they're going to teach English. Okay, so I'm going to make that assumption. That might be a bad assumption, but it's probably correct. And if that's the case, or if you're going to teach in that their native tongue, and it's a phonetic language, you want to teach a phonics-based reading system. Okay, any simple phonics-based reading system is a great place to start. Don't do what we do here in the United States in our public school system, which has destroyed the basis of reading in America. Because what the public education system in America does is it takes a phonetic language and applies a learning system based on ideographic language. And in other words, the whole word, whole language, whatever they're calling it now, that it's not phonics-based, which is ludicrous. Anyway, so a simple... my wife taught our kids how to read on a simple phonics-based system, and it worked great. Okay, so it doesn't have to be highly complicated or curriculum intensive. A simple phonics-based reading system would be good. And so, in addition to picking those two or three homestead families, you're going to start building this small library. And just start taking chunks and studying and reading and watching videos. So if you're not able to do it right now for whatever reason, there's no reason that you can't start. Okay, a lot of people will, they'll decry people and say, look, okay, you're reading a book, but that's not real life. Yeah, I get it. But sometimes that's all you can do. Okay, and watching a video and reading a book are better than doing nothing. Okay, for the person who says, well, yeah, I want a homestead, but it's not going to do any good to read books. I just got to go do it. Not true. Not true at all. Okay, homesteading is an art and a science. Okay, and the science is you get from processing information. The art is doing it and learning and saying, wow, even though the book said this, that's not really what's working. Okay, all that is going to happen, and there is a difference between watching a video and then doing it in real life. I get it. But you wouldn't even be able to try and do it in real life unless you watched that video or someone taught you personally. Okay, so again, hit this small library and start. Okay, so I'm going to give you some resources. And that's the best advice I can give is to tell you to start crawling through some books, start watching videos. If you have the opportunity, which is even better, is to go intern with somebody, be a woofer with somebody. So find someone who's doing what you want to do and go, hey, can I come over and help you work on Saturdays? You will learn an immense amount. Okay. And if you find out somebody, start asking around. If you find out people are going to be processing ducks on a day, say, hey, can I come help? Okay, you will learn an immense amount that way by getting practical experience. So yes, it's more than reading books, but again, if that's all you got, that's all you got. Okay, as well as reading books, you're watching videos, listening to podcasts, etc. All right, so here are some resources for you. Now, one of the first resources that I'll give you is a couple of videos, because you know some people are just like, well, hey, I just need to start, sit back, and just take in the big picture here. So if you want to take in the big picture of things like permaculture, which will give you a broad-based overview on almost anything that you want to do, you can apply permaculture principles to it. I don't care if it's starting a small business, if you're going to go and teach people how to sow, how to work on, equipment, vehicles, start a small-scale farm, whatever. Understanding permaculture principles, big picture principles, will help you. And so before I give you the deep reading, I'm going to give you the videos. So I recommend Jeff Lawton's videos. So if you go to jefflawton.com, that's G-E-O-F-F, Lawton.com, and watch all his free videos. Now, he doesn't go into great depth in these videos. He does an online permaculture design course where he goes into great depth, and that's where I got my training after reading and reading and reading and watching all these videos. But again, this is a good place to start for homesteading, for small-scale farming, how to integrate elements together. Go to his site, watch all of his free videos. It's probably several hours worth of videos, and they're invaluable. Now, you're not going to understand everything that he's talking about, but you're going to get the big picture. Another good documentary is it's called The Permaculture Orchard. And this is more geared towards orchards, so growing trees, etc. But it brings in a whole lot of other things. It brings in a whole lot of other elements into the picture of companion planting, running animals through an orchard, attracting birds for their benefits, etc. So again, all of these things slowly, piece by piece, will help you to develop a picture of what I think is invaluable for homesteading, for teaching people how to sustenance live, to small-scale farming, even to large-scale farming. Okay, it's a different model. It is not the commercial model. But what I like about permaculture is that you can take this anywhere in the world. You can take it to a third world country, or you can take it to the United States of America, and you can apply all of this. You cannot take the U.S., big agricultural farming practices and take it anywhere in the world. You can't do that. Not even close. Monsanto will pull their trick and they'll go to third world countries and try and give out seed, try and get them to plant the seed. And then all of a sudden, guess what? They need the sprays and they need the chemicals and they need the machinery to be able to do anything with it. It's worthless. Okay, but at permaculture principles, you can scale it up and scale it down. Another one is All Videos by Joel Salatin. This gets into a little bit more of a medium scale as opposed to, like I say, an individual scale. But this would be great for anyone to start a small business, even if it's a side business, a small business in chickens, meat chickens or chicken eggs, or even in a small scale way of beef, etc. He is a master at this. All of his infrastructure is lightweight. It's cheap. It's mobile. Okay, so it's all things that could happen in a third world country, and that's what I'm giving you here. Things that can work here in America or in any third world country. The next film it's called Back to Eden. Back to Eden Gardening, I think, is what it's called. So you just Google it. It's free online. This is it's more towards the annual garden. And it talks, it's basically no-till gardening. But he talks about a lot of principles there that I think are very important, very applicable also to the third world, because he uses only compost and manures for fertilizer, no sprays, all of that. So again, it's unrealistic to go into a third world country and go, oh, hey, you need to put in all these chemical fertilizers and you need to do all this chemical spray. They're not going to have the money for that. Okay, what they are going to need to do is plant highly diverse polycultural systems that help balance themselves out. Okay, this isn't exactly the opposite of what we do in the United States in most Western countries on a large scale. We do monocropping, but we apply massive machinery and massive chemical inputs. Okay, so those would be some videos I would start with. Again, Jeff Lawton, Permaculture Orchard, Back to Eden, and all of Joel South and stuff. And you can just Google permaculture and homesteading, and you're going to get videos on people who are homesteading. For example, on YouTube, there's Wrangler Star. There's Engineer 775. Those are great channels to follow. With Wrangler Star, they're doing small-scale homesteading. Engineer 775 comes up with all kinds of excellent ways for water storage, whether it's developing springs or rainwater catchment, using different methods of alternative energy that are very inexpensive. For example, he has a pretty widespread video out there about hot water from a rocket stove using thermal siphoning. Okay, again, all of these are quite possible anywhere in the world. And next, I want to talk about a few books. Okay, so some of the books that I've read and I found very helpful. In fact, before I took Jeff Lawton's Permaculture Design course, I pretty much read most of these books. Not all of them, but most of them. And that helped me when I went through the course to really grasp a lot of it. So I would not recommend taking a permaculture design course until you have been studying the subject at least for a while. Okay, if you have a rudimentary knowledge of it, then absolutely go for it. There's more and less expensive ways to take that kind of a course. Okay, so I'll just leave it at that. All right, the first book. I don't like the title, but it's called Gaia's Garden, and it says A Guide to Home-Scale Permaculture. That's written by Toby Hemingway, but it's a great primer on permaculture, and what I feel is a great primer on homesteading. And it covers any number of subjects. In fact, I will tell you, when I do my design, either for myself or other people, this is my go-to book for looking up things like plant guilds, so things that grow well together. Okay, so not just planting, for example, the apple tree. You're doing companion planting so that you can attract pollinators, so that you can provide mulch, so you can dynamically accumulate nutrients from way down below, so that you can fix nitrogen, so that you can plant other herbs and that will help keep weeds and grasses at bay, etc. Okay, so my go-to book for different companion guild, they call them guilds. Okay, and pretty much everything else there is to know about permaculture, this book has got it. I'd say one of the good places to start as far as books. And again, I'm not going in any order here. Now, the next one was written by Bill Mollison, and he is pretty much known to be the founder of permaculture, an Australian out of Tasmania. And it's called Permaculture, A Designer's Manual. Now, this book, don't even bother buying this book until you've read a few basic books. This literally is more like a designer's manual. Okay, this is more like going to an engineering textbook before you understand the basics of engineering. Okay, but it is an invaluable resource, and if you've got a good knowledge base of permaculture, then I recommend it. It's pricey, though. Okay, the next one is Sepp Holzer's Permaculture. This guy is very interesting, and it's a practical guide to small-scale integrative farming and gardening. So again, homesteading, great for that. He's basically, this guy, he farms about 100 acres on steep mountainsides in Austria, above 5,000 feet. So this is really geared towards colder climates, high altitude. However, the principles in here work for anywhere. But if somebody happens to be in a mountain state, they're above 3,000 feet, or in a temperate climate, this would be a great book to have. He was doing permaculture before he knew the word permaculture. I mean, that's this guy. He's done awesome stuff. He created an intricate network of terraces, raised beds, ponds, waterways, productive fruit trees, other vegetation. I mean, he's done it all, and he's done it in places where people say, oh, no, you can't do that. Yeah, you can't do that. He's done it. Okay, so, and he's done it all very inexpensively. So, like, for example, he runs pigs. He doesn't run pigs in a pig pen. He moves pigs, like pasture-raised pigs. So he moves them from place to place. So they're in one place creating disturbance. And after a time, they move to another place. Okay, so not too little time in an area, not too much time in an area. He creates cheap infrastructure. He takes trees, just logs, not milled at all, just logs, and creates these very small structures that pigs love. Okay, so that's a very helpful book. Really helped me in the area of thinking about swales and ponds and land, how important that is for the landscape. All right, the next book, which is probably my favorite book with regards to permaculture, homesteading, etc. This is called The Resilient Farm and Homestead by Ben Falk. And the subtitle is An Innovative Permaculture and Whole Systems Design Approach. This was an excellent book. Now, he is in Vermont, and he is in a temperate climate. I think it's about zone 5, maybe even zone 4. He goes into depth on site design process, selection, adapting the land to change, flood mitigation, cost of living, as in lowering the cost of living, gravity-fed water systems, compost, urine, human manure, biochar, fuel wood production, and other strategies that would integrate all types of systems together. He also talks about integrating perennial crops with grazing animals. This is a great book. If I had to have only one book on permaculture and homesteading, this would probably be it. The next book is called Restoration Agriculture. Another excellent, excellent book. This is by Mark Shepard, and the subtitle is Real World Permaculture for Farmers. Now, the one difference of this book than all the others that I've given you is the others were all based on usually a homestead, a farm, or small scale farming. This ups the scale a bit. This takes permaculture to a commercial scale, and I don't mean the agricultural commercial scale of thousands and thousands of acres. I mean, you know, a 100-plus acre commercial scale perennial system, okay, where he takes, he runs trees and animals and works them symbiotically. It's called silviculture. Okay, so you're taking trees and pasture and you're combining them and getting much out of it. So restoration agriculture looks at sustainably ways to grow perennial food crops, okay, in a resource compromised future. Okay, so he says here, and I'll just read one paragraph. How our food is produced is too often overlooked in the quest to get it into our mouths. Around the globe, most people get their calories from annual agriculture. The majority of the carbohydrates, proteins, and oils that feed humanity are from annual plants. Those that grow fast for one season, produce lots of seeds, then die. Rice, wheat, and corn are all seeds from annual plants. Human cultures have only relied upon annual plants for not very long at all. In addition to requiring ceaseless labor, annual plants have carried with them another curse. Every single human society that has relied on annual crops as staple foods in their diet has collapsed. The restoration agricultural system described in this book works. It is possible for humans to produce staple foods using perennial agricultural ecosystems that actually improve the quality of the environment. This can be done on a backyard farm or ranch scale. Okay, so again, now most of his stuff is commercial or ranch scale. But this is an excellent point when it comes to, especially if you're going overseas into third world countries, again, is saying, okay, well, we have to do this annual system that requires all this labor, requires all these inputs. Even if it is done in a sustainable, organic manner, it's still going to require all those inputs, as opposed to creating systems that are perennial in nature. And that would help families over in third world countries be more productive, be able to do other things besides just farm if they can develop these perennial type systems. All right, the next book, which I actually have not finished yet, is called Farming the Woods. And it's called An Integrated Permaculture Approach to Growing Food and Medicinals in Temperate Forests. Okay, so again, as you can see, we're in a temperate climate up here in northern Idaho. And that's why I tend to get these books that deal with temperate climates. So there's a lot of good books out there. And all the principles in here are applicable to subtropical, tropical. It's just the different types of plantings that you're going to do. And you have to think through that. So, for example, you can't grow an apple tree in a tropical environment, okay, because they requires chill hours and all of that, just like you can't grow a mango tree in northern Idaho, not unless you do it indoors. Okay, so Farming the Woods is another good one, at least so far. It concentrates more on what we would call forest gardening, which is basically farming the woods, just like the title says. It's forest gardening. It's perennials. It's nuts. It's mushrooms. It's medicinal herbs, and crops like that. Even running animals in forests, okay, which a lot of people just don't think about. But that's entirely possible. In fact, that's what we're going to do with our pigs, is it'll be kind of a silvopasture system where we run them through lightly forested areas. Maybe some denser paddocks and then some more pasture-like paddocks. Okay, and that's all has to do with prepping, encouraging growth and disturbance, and increasing our pasture. Now, I've got another book here that has had excellent reviews, but I have not even picked it up yet. And this is the one that I want to get to really soon because I've heard great things about it. In fact, I've heard that this is really excellent from a really good source. So I would be happy, and just from looking at it and reading the back and just a little bit of scanning, I would recommend this as well. It's called The Nourishing Homestead. It says, one back to the land family's plan for cultivating soil skills and spirit. It's by a guy named Ben Hewitt. And it's a practiculture way to grow nutrient-dense food, produce healthy fats, and live the good life. Okay? So I can't wait to do this. This book tells their story of how they can create truly satisfying, permanent, nourished relationship to the land, nature, and one another. Okay, so sounds like a good book for those preparing to try and teach others how to homestead as well. All right, so those are some basic suggestions on where to start. I know I went through that really fast, and I'll try and put in the notes some links to some of these sources that will help you out. But, you know, I hesitate to say this because this is not what we've done, but in some cases, it may be sound advice, and that's to take it slow, start slow. You know, and again, that's what most people would advise. That is not how we've done it. But then again, this is our full-time gig now. But if you can't jump in with both feet, well, then start slow. Start Start with some small livestock. Start with, say, chickens or rabbits. Start. Do a test garden. All of those will help you learn these types of skills. But again, developing a good reading program, watching all kinds of videos will really help in gaining the knowledge. Now, I will address, because she asked, things like raising rabbits. And eventually we'll do a podcast solely on raising rabbits, because we're still very much in the learning phase with all of this, and the rabbits are no exception. But we have been studying this quite a bit, and it's really interesting to me to think back and look at. I've mentioned this before. I think very interesting to look at the old public service announcements when it came to wartime. Patriotic type activities. So it was patriotic in World War I to raise hens. It was patriotic during World War II to have a victory garden in America. And that was, your own vegetable garden and raising a backyard flock of hens. Well, in the UK during World War II, the patriotic thing to do was to raise rabbits for meat. Okay, and so that was kind of like for us, it was chickens. For them, it was rabbits. And there's a reason for it. They're very easy to raise. They breed well, like rabbits. And easy to take care of, easy to process. I mean, everything about them is pretty good. They're sustainable. It's not hard to set up these systems. It doesn't take a lot of money to get started at all. I mean, honestly, you can get started raising rabbits for $50. You really can. You could, especially if you could get a hold of a couple of rabbit hutches. You could get started really cheaply. I mean, you can get rabbits, generally speaking, bucks and does for around $15 a piece. Okay, and that's your start of your breeding stock. So that's a great place to start. But I will just emphasize one more time the importance of wherever you're going, and it doesn't matter if you're going to be a missionary in a third world country or if you're going back to the family farm in Pennsylvania or if you're going to buy land in Tennessee or North Idaho, is to understand what works well there. Okay, what is your land good at? Okay. That may sound silly because most of the time we try and put our land into the box what we want to do instead of looking at it and going, okay, what are the capabilities of this land? Yeah, and we can tweak them and we can foster those capabilities of the land. But if we would start and look and go, okay, what animals would do well here? What types of perennial plantings would do well here? What types of annual gardens would do well here? And you find out what works well in your area. You have to consider, I wouldn't start and buy something and try and grow something that's on the edge of the climate I'm in. Okay, so for example, I'm in zone 6. Most of the things that we plant up here are hardy to something lower than zone 6. Okay, I'm not going to plant something. I'm not going to find a variety of apple, for example, that is only good to zone 6. I'm going to find something that's at least good to zone 5. Or if I do pick something that's on the edge, I better come up with a microclimate that will support that and will help that along. And there are ways to do that. But as a general rule, you want to grow systems that will work well in your area. Okay, and that'd be the same thing for entrepreneurship. If you're going to a third world country, it might not be a good idea to try and teach a bunch of people how to be an auto mechanic if there are hardly any cars there. Okay, now if there are a ton of motorcycles running around, maybe you can teach them how to be a motorcycle mechanic. Okay, or if there is a great need for food, then yeah, maybe you teach them how to be a small-scale farmer. You teach them how to be a sustenance farmer so they grow the vast majority of all of their own food, plus maybe one or two cash crops. Okay, so for example, that would mean like if I was going to a third world country and I was talking to people and I just wanted them to be able to feed their family, I would recommend and set up systems where they are growing the vast majority of their own food so they can provide for the vast majority of their own caloric intake. And then I would be looking and seeing what are the needs of that community, what were the immediate needs, whether it's food-wise or not. But let's just say it is food-wise. Well, maybe there's a great need for meat chickens. There's a market for it. So in addition to this family growing all of their own food, they grow an extra 200 to 300 meat chickens a year, okay? And then maybe there's also a need for meat rabbits or meat guinea pigs. And then they also do that. They also grow an extra 300 guinea pigs or rabbits a year, you know, for sale above and beyond what they need. Okay, so that would be my recommendation, is to make sure that these people can provide for themselves, provide for their own sustenance, and then also see what the community needs. And remember, sustainable systems that don't require lots of inputs. And it doesn't matter if you're in a third world country or the United States. Your goal should be to set up sustainable systems that don't require a lot of input. We are not buying any chemical fertilizer to put on any of our crops here at all. We will generate all of our own compost. We will reuse all the manures from our animals, and that will be our fertilizer. And then, you know, quite honestly, even if my production is slightly lower in certain areas because I'm not putting on chemical fertilizer, so be it. Now, I don't think that would be the case over the long run. I think a lot of times these chemical fertilizers and sprays are a fix me now type of situation where you might get increased production now, but there is a cost to that. There is a cost to that in the soil, in the life of the soil, etc. So sustainable systems. Sounds like this couple's on the right track. Sounds like what they want to do is a noble cause. I assume they're going to bring the gospel to these people first and foremost, but in a very practical way, they want to help them to be able to live their lives and to eat and be able to take care of their families and even produce their own small businesses. So I think we'll cut it off right there. Again, I don't know if it helped much, but if you just take some of these sources and just start. So, I listed out a lot of resources here. Just start plugging away. Just pick one. And if you don't know where to start, well, start watching a couple of documentaries. Okay, start there, and then work your way into some of these books and these other videos and following Homesteading Families online, things like that. All those are great ways to get started. Our scripture for today comes from Romans chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. Paul, a servant of Christ Jesus, called to be an apostle, set apart for the gospel of God, which he promised beforehand through his prophets in the Holy Scriptures, concerning his Son, who was descended from David according to the flesh, and was declared to be the Son of God in power according to the Spirit of holiness by his resurrection from the dead, Jesus Christ our Lord, through whom we have received grace and apostleship to bring about the obedience of faith for the sake of his name among all the nations, including you, who are called to belong to Jesus Christ. To all those in Rome who are loved by God and called to be saints, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. That's the podcast for today. Don't forget to visit us at thecourageouslifepodcast.com. Please leave us some comments and questions. Also, like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Thanks for listening. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.